that's what gets really difficult when we have this much fire on the landscape, is to try to prioritize which fires are posing a threat to life and safety.
Wildfire season ramps up in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, July 15th. Good evening. I'm Zachariah Hughes, filling in for Lori Townsend. Also tonight, running unopposed for the state legislature.
I just don't think there's a lot of excitement out there for wanting to be a member of the House or the Senate right now.
Did you think about challenging him again?
Absolutely not.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
The House ended its special session today, having taken no actions during the 5 days. House Speaker Mike Chenault says the legislature has already considered the permanent fund restructuring and tax increases that Governor Bill Walker asked them to pass.
Staying here for another 30 days is not going to resolve the revenue issues before us. We have discussed ad nauseum all the different proposals, and I cannot see any significant changes within the time allotted for this special session.
The Senate declined an invitation from the House to meet to consider overriding Governor Bill Walker's budget vetoes. Senate President Kevin Meyer says there wasn't enough support to reach the 45 votes needed to override the vetoes. They included a reduction in permanent fund dividend funding that's expected to cut dividends in half to $1,000 per person.
When we looked at all the variables, all the pros and cons, we just felt like it was best to not accept the invitation to meet for the purposes of overriding the vetoes.
The last House floor session was filled with speeches on the state's fiscal crisis. Anchorage Republican Representative Craig Johnson attacked Walker's PFD funding veto.
This time Walker's reached into the pocketbooks of every man, woman, and child in Alaska and, in my opinion, stolen $1,000 from each of them.
Juneau Republican Representative Kathy Munoz says Walker did the right thing by issuing the vetoes, even if she didn't agree with all of them.
I think the governor demonstrated a great deal of courage in his actions.
Anchorage Democratic Representative Les Guerra expressed concern that the Walker administration's projected budget cuts could play into the hands of opponents of a fiscal plan.
I think what he did was he told people who want major cuts, take no action and you get the cuts that you want.
Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon says she's interested in working with Walker's administration and all four legislative caucuses on a task force that would consider a couple of the major issues that have stalled in the legislature. House Speaker Chenault expressed an interest in her idea. The Senate could vote to adjourn when it meets on Monday. A Bethel jury has awarded $140,000 to a man injured in the back of a police vehicle when the officer slid off the road and hit an electrical pole. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
The crash occurred in 2014 when former Bethel police officer Aaron Fidolfi was driving the vehicle with Adrian Hoffman of Tununic handcuffed in the back seat. According to police records, Fidolfi was speeding in icy conditions when he lost control of the vehicle, slamming Hoffman's head into the car's interior. Both Fidolfi and Hoffman received minor injuries and were transported to the hospital for treatment. Hoffman says he blacked out on impact.
I had a real big swollen forehead, broken nose, hurt neck and back, cut an arm. Couple black eyes.
Attorney Jim Valcarci represented Hoffman in the case and says police footage shows Fidolfi securing his own seatbelt but never buckling Hoffman's. The jury spent 2 days deliberating their decision and released the verdict Thursday. Hoffman had been taken into police custody for causing a disturbance in a home while intoxicated. He was on felony probation at the time and served a short jail sentence for drinking alcohol. Hoffman works as a tribal police officer in Tununic. On one of the last days of the trial, during a recess, he and his long-term girlfriend stepped into another courtroom and got married. They have 4 children together. Hoffman says the money is going towards his kids.
All the money that I won, I'm not going to just burn it away. I'm going to use it for good use.
Fadolfi is in Anchorage serving a one-year prison sentence for an unrelated crime. Earlier this year, the state of Alaska charged Fadolfi with one count of third-degree attempted sexual assault and one count of official misconduct after attempting to force a Bethel woman to perform a sexual act on him while on duty. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
A late-season fireburst has state and federal response agencies scrambling across the interior. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
A few hot, dry days paired with over 25,000 lightning strikes, and Alaska is on fire.
Produced over 80 new fires around the state.
Division of Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry says what had been a wimpy fire season is now looking eerily similar to last summer, when abundant lightning sparked blazes that charred over 5 million acres. This year's bust comes as state and federal firefighting agencies were preparing to ramp down, sending two water scooping planes to the lower 48 and making crews available to work there. Mowry says agencies have scrambled to respond to this week's turnaround.
It is a big juggling act for fire managers. You know, we do have a limited supply of initial attack resources, and that's what gets really difficult when we have this much fire in the landscape, is to try to prioritize, you know, which fires are posing a threat to, you know, life and safety.
Two such fires, one near the Salcha River south of Fairbanks and another near Toke, were hit hard by fire crews on the ground and by aerial water and retardant drops late Thursday. Numerous other blazes started by lightning, especially in southwest Alaska and in the Galena Zone, are in remote areas and being allowed to burn. The forecast calls for cooling and increased chance of precipitation beginning over the weekend, but Mowry says if the weather doesn't come through, large fires could develop and pose a smoke threat.
That's always a concern. I mean, some of these fires yesterday and some of the more remote areas did blow up yesterday, as expected in this hot, dry weather. And then it sort of is a matter of which way the wind's blowing. I took a call today from a woman in Central who said they were pretty socked in with smoke.
Mowry says fire managers plan to take advantage of any break in the weather to get on top of problem fires. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
One of the larger fires is nearing a lodge in the gates of the Arctic National Preserve, which the National Park Service says has doubled in size since yesterday. Four smoke jumpers went to the site to set up protections. The Park Service expects the fire to reach the preserve sometime today. The second fire this week to approach the Toke cutoff is burning at about 200 acres around 8 miles southeast of the community. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Pokemon Go takes over Alaska.
In a matter of a day, she used up 3 gigabytes of our internet to use this app.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal Housing Lender, Member FDIC.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline and its operations today and into the future.
A fifth of Alaska legislators running for re-election this year face no opposition, which begs the question, why in such a politically active state does anyone run unopposed? Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld takes a look at one candidate, Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman, who faces no contest for the second time.
It's only July, but the race is pretty much over for Bert Stedman. He has no opponent in the August Republican primary or the November general election.
Why do you think nobody's running against you?
Well, I think I'd be a tough competitor. I've got a good background in Southeast, and I think we've done a good job, at least I'd like to think that, representing the district.
I checked with a couple Democratic Party officials who would be backing a challenger, but I didn't find out much of anything. So I asked his 2012 opponent, former Senator Albert Kukesh, an Angoon Democrat. Why isn't anyone running against Bert Stedman?
I just don't think there's a lot of excitement out there for wanting to be a member of the House or the Senate right now.
Did you think about challenging him again?
Absolutely not. I was part of the House and the Senate when there was money, and I know what it is like to be in a minority, not have any kind of influence, and it's not something I want to do anymore.
Political analyst Christopher Clark, who's worked as a journalist and legislative aide, says Stedman is among incumbents able to run on their records.
I think the constituents are saying we're happy with you guys, and we like the work you're doing, especially when you're Bert Stedman and you were finance co-chair for several years, and back at a time when we were wealthy, and Bert Stedman brought the bacon home, and people remembered that.
Two other state senators and seven state representatives also face no election challengers. That totals 10 of 50 seats up for grabs this year. And it doesn't include one more lawmaker who only faces a declared write-in candidate. Clark says the reasons vary from district to district, but in most cases, unchallenged candidates follow the saying that all politics is local.
I think the one thing you'll find in common that they all have, the ones who are running unopposed, is the ability to connect with their constituents and make their constituents feel listened to, and when constituents need help, help them.
Reporting in Juneau, I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
When residential psychiatric treatment services for youth aren't available in the state, children are sent out of Alaska. But the Bartlett Regional Hospital in Juneau is trying to change that by building a treatment center in the state's capital. KTOO's Lakeidra Chavis reports.
So far this year, about 120 children have been sent out of state for high-level psychiatric treatment. It's about a sixth of what it was in 2004, largely due to a statewide initiative that ended 2 years ago. Bartlett Regional Hospital began planning to build a treatment center in Juneau in 2004. Now, things have changed. Mark Johnson is one of the hospital's board members.
A lot of the discussion earlier was more about an acute care level of service. And so this is kind of changing the focus to a different level. And I think it takes a little bit of time for that discussion to take place in the community.
That different level of service is a residential psychiatric treatment center, or RPTC, which has a longer treatment model and focuses on children who've experienced severe trauma and suffer from multiple mental illnesses.
There are kids who need this level of service. It is not available in this region right now. There's not enough available in this state right now. And when the kids have to be sent someplace else, it's, you know, somewhat challenging and very challenging for the families of those kids.
Although RPTC services are offered around the state, there are none in Southeast. Bartlett hopes to change that with a 28-bed facility. Sally Schneider is the hospital's chief behavioral health officer and oversees the project, which is still in the feasibility stage.
We started looking at what is called a psychiatric residential treatment center that allows the children a longer spectrum of care to be able to better meet their developmental needs, and those involve multiple community partners from school systems to family physicians, and it's a different way of looking at it.
But running these services is expensive, and some other organizations in Alaska have tried to provide these services, then downsized or shut down. According to the State Department of Health, the cost of providing these services has increased by 25% in the past 11 years, while reimbursement rates from the state have barely changed. Rita Bishop is a program manager with the state's Behavioral Health Division and helped coordinate the Bring Back the Kids initiative, which helped reduce the number of kids being sent out of state.
In terms of the kids who are going out of state, what we're seeing at this point is that it's not the kinds of children and youth who are easily served in other community programs.
Bishop gave an example of a child with fetal alcohol syndrome who also suffers from intellectual disabilities and has other behavioral needs. They'd seek out-of-state services because the child's needs are so specific.
And so if we are going to develop additional services in Alaska, one of the things I'm concerned with is that we develop the services we actually need.
Bartlett officials will present an update to the Juneau Assembly in September. Aside from finding potential land, they're asking if the opportunity to provide this type of care in Juneau makes sense financially. In Juneau, I'm Lakeidra Chavis.
Juneau saw a dramatic rise in burglaries in 2015, and so far this year, the trend is continuing. Victims of break-ins have lost everything from inexpensive belongings to thousands of dollars in valuables. As KTOO's Quentin Chandler reports, Juneau police say drug addiction is driving part of the increase.
Anytime someone breaks in somewhere to steal or commit a felony, that's a burglary. It's a crime of opportunity that can affect anyone, says Juneau Police Lieutenant David Campbell.
What I see a lot of is people who are not exposed to crime
and they live in Juneau, and they think it's a little crime-free utopia, and they make it very easy for an opportunistic thief to victimize them.
Campbell is at his office computer reviewing the history of burglary in Juneau.
We had basically a 3 years of pretty solid reductions going down, and then in 2015, we had a pretty sharp increase.
It's a 64% jump.
So then the question is, okay, well, why? In 2015, we also saw a pretty big increase in our issues dealing with people that were, you know, dealing with controlled substances.
Campbell sees a definite correlation between heroin use and other crimes. He says addicts sometimes resort to crime to pay for their addiction.
It would be inappropriate for me to say that that's the sole reason.
He says JPD has also seen serial burglars who don't have a drug problem, but repeatedly steal for other reasons. Simply put, he can't identify every factor contributing to Juneau's spike in burglaries, and it's impossible to say who all the burglars are. They cross all sectors of the community.
What I can pretty much guarantee is if someone is a burglar, they're not going to burgle one place and then stop.
Campbell says most burglars will continue breaking into places until they are arrested or something else stops them. So property owners need to make their properties too risky to target. He suggests property owners practice crime prevention through environmental design.
So we're talking about, you know, natural lighting, lines of surveillance, you know, things along those lines.
He says JPD has posted advice for small business owners on its Facebook page. Suggestions like empty your cash register, leave it open and visible to people passing by the front of the store.
If a thief walks by or a burglar walks by, they're going to look in and they're going to think, wow, if I go into this place, anybody on the outside is going to be able to see me in there because there's easy viewing access through the windows. And why would I go in there? The cash register is open. There's nothing in it. All right.
Campbell says people can also try target hardening, which includes installing stronger locks and security systems. According to JPD's annual report, the number of vehicle thefts and thefts in general also rose significantly in 2015. In Juneau, I'm Quentin Chandler.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Apollo MT by Guardian Flight, Medevac memberships that protect you or a family member when there is a need for air medical transportation. Information available at apollomt.com.
Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Pokemon Go. The smartphone app has exploded in popularity in its first week, and Alaska is no exception. In Anchorage, crowds of people can be spotted at all hours, floating around parks and city streets with their eyes glued to their phones, trying to collect little creatures all over town. The game draws on nostalgia for a craze that started almost 20 years ago, and is popular in some places you might not expect, like a military base.
Yeah, almost everybody in my platoon has it.
Private First Class Dylan Carter is standing outside Soldiers Chapel at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, phone in hand, and he doesn't see any contradictions between his job as an airborne infantryman and a Pokemon fan.
I mean, everybody's got to be a man to do the job, but in all reality, like, it goes back to the nostalgia thing. I mean, I have a Pokeball tattoo. There's a kid in everybody.
The game is popular far outside of Anchorage, so we checked in with some APRN reporters to find out what issues are being raised by this Pokemon craze across the state, starting with KTNA's Philip Manning.
Part of Pokemon Go's explosive success is the fact that it takes a 20-year-old game franchise and overlays it on the real world.
Where we work, there's like about like five or six of them just in like a small little area.
Aspiring Pokemaster Jason is wandering around downtown Talkeetna, which has about 10 Pokestops. Those are the places like parks and monuments, and even the KTNA station building, chosen by the game's developer Niantic. Players gather around Pokestops to collect supplies they need in the game, like Pokeballs. Jason tells me how to throw my Pokeball at a bird-like creature called Pidgey that has just appeared on my screen.
There's like an aiming reticle on there too, so you know, depending on how well you aim, the higher chance you have of actually catching it.
Pokemon Go is integrated with Google Maps and uses the GPS coordinates on a player's phone to tell you if there are any digital monsters nearby. Jason says it can mean wandering around for more than 10 minutes hunting.
It'll come up and tell you if there's anything nearby, and you just kind of wander around until it kind of pops up on your map.
Jasmine, Jason's girlfriend and hunting partner, says one of the game's major benefits is that it's a fun excuse to get outside for physical activity.
It's definitely a nerdy Fitbit.
The game takes for granted that your phone can get online while you're out and about. But for huge sections of Alaska with little to no network coverage, that's obviously not always available. So to find out how you hunt Pokemon on, say, an island in the Bering Sea, we got in touch with reporter Zoe Sobel.
In Onalaska, the internet is slow. Think dial-up speeds. If you're lucky, you may be able to watch YouTube, but you'll have to wait for it to buffer. That's not stopping 17-year-old Pfizer Chiron from playing Pokemon Go. He's got an AT&T phone with mobile data. In fact, he's even getting up 4 hours early to take advantage of better playing conditions.
You can go around where it's not like wet grass and it's going to be hard to like catch Pokemon there or something. Yeah.
Although Chiron prefers the morning, there are kids playing all day long, but many of them do not have data. Instead, they're using an island-wide network of Wi-Fi hotspots provided by another company, Optimera. And it's expensive. Just ask Felicia Tungel, whose daughter plays.
In a matter of a day, she used up 3 gigabytes of our internet to use this app. It's almost $80 worth of internet.
Now, here's the catch. The Pokemon Go app doesn't actually use that much data, around 10 megabytes in a half hour of play, a lot less than an app like Facebook. But according to Optimera's CEO Emmett Fitch, your gaming costs could come down to how your smartphone is configured.
Most phones by default are set up to automatically download updates or all the applications that you're running while you're connected to a Wi-Fi network, because everywhere else in the lower 48, Wi-Fi is essentially free.
But people can adjust those settings to stop unnecessary downloads, and Tungle's laying down the law with her daughter. She has to turn off the app when she's not playing, but that's really the only restriction she's imposing.
It keeps her active. It gets all the kids everywhere. I mean, if you see a kid running in the street, they're chasing Pokemon right now.
But what about trying to rein in gaming in a more formal, educational setting? Since it's summer vacation, we asked KCAW's Catherine Rose to look into how educators are responding to Pokemon in one of the few places where school is currently in session, sort of.
Pokemon Go's release happens to coincide with the Sitka Fine Arts Camp, which is seeing phone use skyrocket. And that is a problem, says Autumn McComiskey, the camp's director of students, because phones generally aren't allowed during class time.
And every time I went into the counseling office, it was Pokemon this and Wiggly Hoo-Ha is doing this thing. So it just felt like it was something that was taking over every conversation.
The other problem popping up is when students walk across town from campus to the Performing Arts Center every night, hundreds of students weaving in and out of traffic. Cecilia Wade is a counselor and says she's had to start confiscating phones.
It was mostly a safety concern because everyone wanted to have their phone out to catch Pokemon and Pokestops and hatch eggs. And so it was it's a lot more yelling at them to put their phones away.
Wade says this might have been because last week was the high school camp, which is a bit more relaxed. And that's just not the case this week during the intensive musical theater session. Because, according to student Jack Hale, everyone is buckling down for the camp-wide production of Guys and Dolls.
There's been a lot of opportunity to play it, but then again, you're also like in rehearsal and you're constantly doing stuff. When you come to Sitka Musical Theater, everyone is really sort of devoted to be there, and you don't want to waste any of your time, you know, playing a game on your phone. But I've definitely seen a few teachers playing it. You know, everyone sort of knows what it is.
Whether the Pokemon craze will last through the summer and linger into the school year remains to be seen. For AK, I'm Catherine Rose.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Mikey Huff in Anchorage. Huff is the co-owner of The Mercantile, a new shop in downtown Anchorage. They specialize in menswear and handmade goods.
So I've been a small business owner in Anchorage for a long time, but as far as having a brick and mortar store goes, that was a big step for us and a new process for me. Figure out what you can live comfortably with. Figure out if, you know, do you need to be paying that $10 bill to Netflix every month? Do you need to be making a car payment when you could be riding a bike? Or, you know, do you need that new pair of shoes? Figuring out what expenses you can cut and invest in yourself and your future instead of investing in these temporary things that probably aren't a necessity. And if you're not utilizing every dollar towards your new business, then you're just wasting your time and your money because you're setting yourself up for failure. I think that the community within Anchorage has been really supportive. Everyone in Anchorage seems to want to work together to build each other, which I really appreciate. I've tried to move away a couple times, but Alaska's really magnetizing for me. I can't keep myself away from it. So every time I leave, I just feel a big pull to come back home. Most notably, I spent some time in Portland, Oregon, and ended up for a while, I think six of us and two cats in a one-bedroom apartment. And then it went down from there where there's three of us living in a Toyota Corolla, and then you can imagine that returning home to Alaska, where I know I have a place to stay and a place to return to, is definitely a whole heck of a lot better than sleeping with two guys in a car.
Mikey Huff lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Zachariah Hughes, Philip Manning, Zoe Sobel, Catherine Rose, and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
Finally, a correction. In a story we aired last night, we referred to Anchorage Republican Representative Charisse Millette as the minority leader of the state house. She is the majority leader. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found on our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman, Ed Schoenfeld, Lakedra Chavis, and Quentin Chandler in Juneau, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Ellen Locke here in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. Ann Hillman produced tonight's show, and I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The Arctic is wild, remote, and untouched. See how contemporary artists challenge the mythical ideal of the North in the Anchorage Museum exhibition, View from Up Here, the Arctic at the Center of the World, on view through October the 2nd. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Museum.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.